Hello, it's great to see you in Washington.
Hello, it's great to be here.
On this sunny, beautiful day.
Yes, yeah. No, it's a gorgeous day in Washington today.
There is a reason why we chose this location, honestly, Ambassador Rosenblum, because you're new in Tashkent. You've been there since May, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you are always out and about. You've been traveling across Uzbekistan, and it's great to catch you here during your very short trip. And I said, hey, you know, let's talk between the Lincoln Monument and the Washington Monument, and of course the Capitol Hill, where you tell me you'll be spending some time talking to U.S. Lawmakers. You were based here for a long time as a policymaker. You handled the relations with Central Asia, specifically with Uzbekistan, from Washington. But you are now there as an ambassador. Mm-hmm. How does it feel? What's the difference like?
Well, it's a big difference on a personal level because I am starting a new life with a new home. I've unfortunately had to have my family stay behind because my daughter's finishing school here. But it's an adjustment on a personal level, but on a professional level, it's opened up such great opportunities and horizons to me.
So you see more now?
I see more now. I mean, I used to visit the region, as you said, and including Uzbekistan, pretty frequently, maybe several times a year, but being there day in and day out is a very different kind of life. It's completely different.
And especially when you're traveling through the regions, talking to the people, you seem to be really, really enjoying the experience.
Yeah.
Have you been surprised? What have you learned so far that, for example, you could never imagine before about the country?
Well, it's hard to say there's something that I'd never imagined, but I think it's just much more real when you're experiencing it face-to-face. One thing that I knew, at least in theory, was the reputation for hospitality of Uzbekistan and its people. And I've just been overwhelmed by the welcome that I've received everywhere I go. It's very warm, it's very genuine, and it's incredible. I mean, food and time and attention and wanting to show me everything. It's been heartwarming to me.
It must be overwhelming, though, to talk to so many people from so many different walks of life. You're accessible, and I have talked to many people who have approached you in Fergana, in other regions, who told you their stories, who have shared their ideas, their issues with you. Do you feel like the Uzbeks are opening up? Because you just said that people are very hospitable. And most of the time, it's very hard to go beyond that hospitality. You know, they want to tell you all the wonderful things when they meet you. But they could really be wanting to share something very special. Do you feel like you're connecting so far?
I do. You know, it's always hard to know when you're hearing from people face-to-face whether they're telling you everything or they're telling you exactly what they're thinking or feeling, because they may have an agenda, right? They're meeting with the U.S. ambassador. But that said, my sense is that people are not afraid to speak out, and I think that's a change in Uzbekistan. And they tell me that. They say that the fear of saying anything, of being critical, is not there anymore. And so that includes their conversations with me. So people have been very open about telling me the good and the bad about their lives. And I would just say that I'm struck by how they always emphasize the good first. They say, you know, life is better. There's more hope. There's more optimism. But we have these problems. We have these complaints. And they're still the vestiges of things that we're trying to deal with.
You know, interestingly, that's something that I too hear a lot, and I'm sure other journalists too who visit Uzbekistan. People are very, you know, straightforward in telling you that they are learning to be candid. They are learning to actually share the painful parts of life, or, you know, their professional experiences. There is more drive towards justice and, you know, their rights and freedom. There is obviously, as you know, a lot of hope around Uzbek reforms. But some feel like things have slowed down now a little bit. That basic trajectory is there, but the momentum has dissipated a little bit. Is that your sense? How do you feel? Where are the reforms right now?
Well,
as you see?
You know, there's so many different reforms. It kind of depends to some extent what you're talking about. But I would say, you know, if you take foreign policy, for example, I think that the shift in foreign policy is still very much there, that it was established early on that making the relations with the immediate neighbors better was going to be a priority. And then I think the president and his team set out to do that. And it's really made a difference, not just in terms of trade flows and the movements of people, but I think in the quality of life. And when I've visited the border areas, I mean, I've now been to, I was in Andijan and went to a border crossing. I was at the border in Termez, the Afghan border. And when I talk to people, they can cite very specific reasons why their life is easier now, being able to cross the border.
What exactly changed, right?
Yeah. In fact, I remember one story that really stuck with me of a young man who, he's now the, I think he's the head librarian at the National Library in Fergana City. And he is from Sokh, from the Sokh region, which I think you visited recently. And he remembers vividly as a child traveling from Sokh to Uzbekistan proper and how difficult it was and how people were made to feel like they were under suspicion all the time. Mm-hmm. And now he goes back to visit his family all the time, very easy, and he remarked on what a difference psychologically that made. So I hear stories like this all over the place. So on foreign policy, I think no one's either questioning the reform very much or seeing it slow down. But on some of the domestic reforms, you do get that sense. And I think the problem that they're encountering on economic reform, on some of the social sector reforms, is that it's very difficult to change a system that's so established in a short period of time. People have certain habits and ways of doing business. There are people who have vested interests in the way it used to be. And so when it gets down to the hard work of changing institutions, changing the way they operate, it's proving to be very difficult.
That's something that we hear very often too. Basically, they say that, you know, the government is focused on low-hanging fruit. It's doing what is possible now,
right.
Whereas it may be time now to tackle some of the harder reforms, but that's where then the vested interests may collide with what you want to do or to make as a real change.
Right.
And that's when, you know, many in the Uzbek society, in the system, look at the United States and hope that maybe we can learn something from them. You know, how do Americans do it? How did they get to where they are today? What kind of technical assistance, what kind of practical assistance we can get from them? So I'm sure you have started conversations about those things.
We have. And some of them have gone beyond conversations into starting to do the technical assistance. You know, we've got, I would say, five areas that we're really focused on in supporting the reforms. Some of them are things we were doing even before that we've now expanded, and some are newer. So the first is agriculture, where we've got a pretty extensive USAID project, and that's helping farmers find new ways to market their crops or to turn them into higher value-added commodities that can be sold either domestically or exported. A second is health, where we're doing a lot of work on specifically on tuberculosis, but also broader healthcare reform, changing the system of healthcare financing and so on. A third one is education, and that's going to be a real growth area for us in the next couple of years. We got some good new resources coming in. In education, it's about training teachers to be better English teachers, especially a lot of focus on English, but also broader curriculum reform. The fourth area is rule of law, where we're working on judicial independence. We're working on helping the law schools and the defense bar to develop further. And then the fifth area is sort of broader economic reform, macroeconomic reform. And you mentioned, you know, advisors and technical assistance. Our Treasury Department is actually now set to provide some advisors to the Ministry of Finance, the Agency for Capital Market Development, and I think one or two others in the very near future. So we're ramping up in all five of those areas, and we really want the reforms to succeed, to help them succeed.
And for those reforms and for these projects to succeed, systemic changes need to be taking place, right? Do you feel like at its fundamentals there are political reforms taking place in the country, that the political system is actually changing?
Yes, I do. But it's an interesting sort of change because as most of the reforms have been, so the political reform is very top-down.
Right.
President Mirziyoyev himself is committed to this project of transforming the country, and many of the ideas are coming from him or from the presidential administration, and then they have to be implemented. And so that makes, sometimes it makes the political reform harder to see. But I, for example, in my meetings in the parliament, have sensed that they feel a new sense of responsibility to play a different role than they have in
the
past.
Very interesting times as the parliamentary elections approach.
Yes.
Right? We see a more proactive, lawmaking body now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you're engaged with them and
yes.
So you see new ways of doing things.
Yeah. I mean, holding hearings, oversight mm-hmm. hearings on executive branch, so that ministries, looking at the budget. Now, you know, it's kind of at this stage still learning how to do these things for the first time mm-hmm. and wondering how far that authority will go. I think there's still a question of how much of a role the legislative branch can have. I know we've heard the president talk about what he would like it to be as a real legislature that, you know, serves as kind of part of checks and balances. But it's a new approach.
So in our recent conversations with Senator Safayev, who you know well, and recently in New York at the UNGA, we talked to the head of the Uzbek Environmental Party, Baki Alekhanov, mm-hmm. and both of them argue that this is the best the system can do now. That, you know, all this criticism about the lack of opposition, real opposition in the country, lack of real active parties, maybe partisanship even, some say, mm-hmm. Isn't there because, you know, it hasn't come to Uzbekistan yet. In general, they say that you need to know more about the political mentality of the country. Mm-hmm. Do you hear those kind of arguments too? What do you think of that kind of an argument defending the system?
Yeah, I do hear those arguments, and you know, I think there's some validity to it. I mean, you know, every country has to find its own path of development towards democracy, towards free markets, or in some countries away from them. But we hope, you know, it's moving toward in that direction in Uzbekistan, and you know, there are lots of different models and ways of getting there. You know, we've been an independent country for 240 years. Our institutions evolved over a long period. We had a different legacy that we were inheriting from the British Empire. I mean, it's really hard to draw analogies and to expect other countries to look the same. We don't expect other countries to look the same as us. So I do give some weight to those arguments. I also think, though, and I think people I talk to in the government recognize this too, that the important thing is that the trend continue in the right direction and that the trajectory towards a more open society, towards more democratic governance, more responsive governance continue.
Pluralism.
Yeah. Mm. The pace at which it goes will vary, and it may not be satisfying to everyone looking at it from outside. But the direction needs to be the same. And so with the parliament, for example, a good example of this is I've talked to a couple of younger people who are running for the first time for seats, and they may or may not win seats in this election. But when I talk to them, I sense that they really understand that their job is to represent a district and a constituency, and it is to advocate for the people who they represent. And that in itself, regardless of what the institution as a whole is able to do at the beginning, and it may not be as partisan or as competitive as our political system. In fact, it probably won't be. That is a step in the right direction, that the legislators start to conceive their role as representing voters and fighting for their interests. So, it's a very complicated process. but I think it's so far, in my short time there in 4 months and talking to lots of people, I do feel the movement is in the right direction, and it's important that it continue that way.
And then U.S. will assist Uzbeks and let's say political parties as they, if they want to get trainings and then if they are seeking assistance.
We will. Yeah. If we're requested, we will absolutely will. I mean, I spoke to the speaker of the Majlis maybe 2 months ago now, of the Oli Majlis. I also spoke to the chairman of the Senate, mm-hmm. Madam Narbayeva. And in both of those meetings, I made it clear that if they want, after the election, after there's new deputies coming in, if they would like some interaction, some assistance, some kind of exchanges with the U.S. Congress or with organizations that we have in the United States, that we are we're ready to provide it. Mm-hmm.
So it seems like everything is going really well for the U.S.-Uzbek relations on the mm-hmm. surface. It's a challenging job. I mean, you pursue U.S. interests. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the main obstacles for you now and for the Trump administration as you pursue those interests in Uzbekistan?
Well, you know, one obstacle or one challenge, let's put it that way, is expectations management. And this goes to some of the questions you were asking before about the pace of the reform and are things slowing down. There's an expectations management issue internally with the population that I know the president is well aware of.
Right.
He's got to deliver results and improve people's lives.
He says that a lot, too.
Or else people start to get impatient.
Right.
But similarly, in the United States, the people that I answer to in Washington, in the State Department, the Congress, and so on, they want to see further progress and movement in a good direction from the standpoint of reform and opening up. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned over the years with any country that's trying to reform is the more you do, the more is expected of you.
Of course. Yeah.
Which is, you know, it doesn't seem fair. It's not, it doesn't, you know, to those who are in the country, that's being focused on. But in fact, that's the dynamic of it. And so I think a challenge for me and for the administration is how do we continue to provide the support we want to, but also manage those expectations so that we don't lose patience. Mm. So that's a challenge. Another one I would say is our businesses have expressed a growing interest in investing in Uzbekistan, which again is something I know the president and the whole government very much want. But new investment projects take time and they take patience, and because the system is still evolving, some will fail, and that's just a reality. And so again, the challenge there is to manage the expectations of the business community and of the Uzbek government for new U.S. investment. And what we really need, I think, is a few success stories. We need a few successful new investments to show that it can be done. We're working on those, but we don't have them yet.
Yeah, and for a long time, GM was a success story.
Although actually, you know, GM isn't out. It's interesting.
Yes, they have some experts still working in the
they
country.
They do, right? And they actually, because I just happened to know something
please.
About this because I visited the GM plant in Osaka, near Andijan.
Which is now Uz Auto, by the way.
Right, it's called Uz Auto, but what GM now talks about is they have an alliance relationship. So they do not have equity in the company anymore. They've sold their equity shares. But they provide licensing for all the products, the Chevrolet brand. They provide engineering services. And a lot of the cars that are coming in are what they call kits that are disassembled, and then they get assembled in the plant there. But they're coming from GM plants, parts manufacturers elsewhere. So
there's a legacy there.
There's a legacy, and they feel like they have a stake. So mm-hmm. so even though the GM name isn't on the plants anymore, GM is still very much here, mm-hmm. or not here, in Uzbekistan.
Afghanistan. We just talked to Ambassador Wells, who talked to us at length about C5+1 and recent talks in New York and what's in general happening to the Trump administration's Afghanistan policy. But you're watching the whole dynamics from the ground, from Tashkent. And Tashkent has become quite active when it comes to its own Afghanistan mm-hmm. policy. What was it like to watch them, hedging? They want to be friends with everybody, including the Taliban, in a way that they don't want to have any issues, right, with all the relevant parties in the region.
Mm-hmm.
But also it seemed that they were cozying up a little bit with the Taliban recently when they hosted a group, some members of which came all the way from Doha while the talks were taking place there. So that caused a lot of questions. And my mm-hmm. question to you is, do you feel like Tashkent and Washington are in sync on Afghanistan?
Yeah.
On the way things stand?
Yes, I do. And I should say that, you know, throughout this period of the negotiations that Ambassador Khalilzad was leading, we felt that Uzbekistan was being a very trusting partner throughout. And they were having meetings with, various different
parties
of the conflict from Afghanistan. And and that was helpful. I mean, they were opening up avenues of dialogue. What was most important throughout was that the government, the foreign ministry, was keeping us informed. There was it was total transparency on in both directions, and that's key to having that trust that you want in a partner. So,
what do they want ultimately? They obviously want peace in Afghanistan, right?
Right.
But what would be the victory, I guess, or a success for the Mirziyoyev administration out of this?
Well, you know, the peace and stability in Afghanistan is so key to the security of Uzbekistan. So that's, you know, number one. That's job one. But I also think that President Mirziyoyev and his whole team see a open and stable Afghanistan as a key to Uzbekistan's trade links and its energy links and its own opening to the outside world. I mean, I was one of the first things I learned when I had this assignment. I probably should have known it earlier, was that Uzbekistan is a double landlocked country,
right,
one of only two in the world, as I understand. Given that geography and the need for access to markets and to the sea and to shipping goods, Afghanistan is at the center of that
Absolutely.
Opening that Uzbekistan needs to have. So I think that Afghanistan is now seen as much as an opportunity as a threat. It's always been, you know, the threat of instability spilling over has always been of a concern. It was a concern in the days of President Karimov. It's still a concern today. But I think one of the significant things President Mirziyoyev has done through his foreign policy changes is to turn that threat into an opportunity. So I do think in terms of, you know, trade routes, in terms of selling its energy, to the east and to the south, in terms of transportation, for all those reasons, Uzbekistan rightly so, views Afghanistan as a great opportunity for its own future.
And the U.S. continues to provide border security assistance, right? I mean, that's why you were there recently.
Yes,
and,
yes.
It's a short border compared to other borders
yes.
that Uzbekistan has.
Yes,
it's 155 kilometers only, but mm-hmm. it is such a key part of the region.
We went on the Friendship Bridge. We walked all the way to as far as you could go
yeah.
before you crossed into Afghanistan.
Cross into Balkh.
halfway across the bridge. And then we went on the river, on river boats that were donated, that had been donated by the U.S. government, some of them 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. On a patrol. We went on, mm-hmm. they do these daily patrols, and we went on patrol boat. And we saw the flow. The day we were there, there weren't a huge number of cars and trucks, but there were some going across.
They tell us about 250 average Afghans enter and leave Uzbekistan every day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing how many Afghans are in Termez. They actually see it as a future business hub.
Yeah. We met with some of them, in fact. We met with the Afghan Council
uh-huh.
and the consulate there in Termez.
Right. Newly opened.
Yes. But also he brought with him some Afghan business people who we had lunch with them. And they were, you know, doing their best to create opportunities. I mean, it's slow. And, but it's happening.
A lot about opportunities from you, from other relevant mm-hmm. U.S. officials, and also from the Uzbek officials themselves. You know, they see challenges or opportunities, and that's quite a new narrative for Uzbekistan. You know,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't like the word challenge before. So that is a major change for Tashkent, as far as we are concerned. And, you know, obviously you want to turn many, many of the U.S. aspirations in the region into projects there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about those five goals that you had as you were leaving for mm-hmm. Uzbekistan when you testified in the U.S. Senate. What are some of the signature or hallmark goals you have or projects you have in mind that you absolutely want to achieve in Uzbekistan? Things
mm-hmm.
that we could be checking with you time to time and see what the progress is?
Yeah, yeah. Well, some of them, actually, all of them are things that I've mentioned already, and it goes back, I guess I always go back as a touchstone to the goals that I laid out in that
mm-hmm,
speech
mm-hmm.
that you referred to at the swearing-in. You know, one of them is definitely to see an increase in U.S. trade and investment, U.S. exports, but also foreign direct investment from the United States.
Where do they stand now?
So the bilateral trade last year was, I think, I want to say it was about $200 million, which is not very high compared to other countries.
But
higher, it was a big increase. Actually, I think it was over $300 million. It was a big increase over the previous year, although that had something to do with Boeing selling one of its Dreamliners And so there's potential to grow. The foreign direct investment, actually, I don't have the number in my head of what the current amount is and what the annual increase was last year, but there's definitely room to grow there. And so that's something that we can track over time and see mm-hmm. how we're doing year to year. I also very much want to be able to point to some elements of the government's reform where we made a contribution, you know, a tangible contribution to its success. And I can see it. We can measure it in health and agriculture already. I hope to be able to measure it in education, especially the English language. The goal actually is the Ministry of Public Education has a goal of training, I think it's 33,000 English teachers mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to get them to a level where they can teach at, you know, at a high internationally recognized level. And we and our programs are going to be training, I think, something like 20,000 wow. English teachers. So if we, you know, a few years from now, if we've succeeded, we can show that. We can test the teachers and see that they're, you know,
tangible.
They've achieved a certain level. And then in general, I really hope that in my time there, that I'm able to point to an increase in the people-to-people ties. This is something I talked about a lot mm-hmm. in my swearing in. I want to be able to say that we have X number of more students going both directions, teachers, scientists, business people, professionals
tourists.
Of all kinds, and tourists, right, tourists. And tourists, I mean, there's already been a big uptick
yes.
in American
mm-hmm.
tourists coming to Uzbekistan. I think last year, in 2018, it was like 14,000 mm-hmm. is the number mm-hmm. that sticks in my mind. I want to see that go up. So there are going to be some metrics that we can use, and those are the things that I'm really interested in.
A lot to focus on.
Yes.
Thank you so much. It's not every day that you get to talk to a U.S. ambassador on on the National Mall here. We really
yeah.
appreciate your time. Thank
Beautiful
you so much for finding these precious minutes for us. We've been talking to Ambassador Daniel Rosenblum, America's top diplomat to Uzbekistan, visiting Washington.
Thank you, Navahar.
And I know that you've been practicing, actually learning and improving your Uzbek. You excite the crowds every time you speak in Uzbek.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but you know how well your Uzbek language addresses were received, right?
Yeah. I do. I hear it almost every day. Mm-hmm. I run into someone who saw my videos. It's incredible how many people saw those videos. Yeah.